This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
In studio with us right now, we have Dr. Chris Dunlap from Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me today.
Tell us a little bit about your background and what you do.
Yeah, well, I was actually born here in Middle Tennessee, and I grew up in Tullahoma, and I went off to get my training at Memphis at the University of Tennessee. I did solo practice in my hometown for about 6 years, and then I got into education, and now I train doctors here in Murfreesboro.
So what made you want to go down this line?
You know, it's been a great opportunity for me, actually. I mean, I love what I do as a physician, but I also love giving back and being able to train up the next generation. And so it's been a real privilege to be able to do this here in Murfreesboro.
What are some of the more interesting stories you've come across over the years?
You know, it's interesting. We run an indigent care clinic for St. Thomas. And so we take people regardless of their ability to pay. And so we have people with insurance and without insurance. And we just get a lot of folks that I guess sort of fall through the cracks in the medical system. And so they come from all over the world. A lot of times we'll get MTSU students and people like that from various different countries. I had my residents one time came to me in the afternoon and they said, hey, we've got this patient and he's a grad student at MTSU and he's having fevers and chills every afternoon about 2 o'clock. And I said, did you ask where he's traveled from? And they said, no. I said, go back and ask. And we found out that he had gone back home to Africa, to Nigeria, and he picked up malaria. And we found malaria here in Murfreesboro in this poor guy. And I called the local infectious disease doctor, and he said, send him. Send him now. We'll never see this again. And so it was just fascinating to see what may be in our community. It's rare, but it's interesting.
He traveled all the way back here, probably feeling horrible on the plane and everything.
Yeah, but he had to get back for classes. So, you know, priorities, right?
That's right. I can't imagine, gosh, and over the years, I can't imagine the different things you would come across and the different doctors with the odd questions they would ask about patients, because I'm sure you get a lot of them.
We do. And I think that's one of the best things I like about family medicine is we get to see, you know, pregnant moms, we get to see their babies, we get to see adults all the way up until end of life. And so we experience a lot of their lives with them. And so there's just interesting social situations and just unique circumstances and just strange diseases that'll walk in the door.
Are there some diseases or illnesses that are making another go around, coming back, you know, things that we thought were not around anymore?
Well, you know, that's interesting that you ask that. We are seeing a little bit of a flare up of measles. And that's something that just hasn't really been the case. When I was in medical school, they would show us pictures of measles and they'd say, this is what used to be. But with vaccines, a lot of that, you know, went away. And so it's been interesting to see a slight uptick in that. It's not terrible, but we do see cases that are outbreaks in various different places across the country and across the world. So that's been unique.
Now, measles, was that something they vaccinated babies and young children for years ago? Then that's what, I guess, left the scar on the left arm, or is that something else?
Oh, that was smallpox, actually. And that's, we stopped giving that in 1970, I think, because smallpox was actually eradicated from the entire world. And so that was a real win, I think, for vaccinations. But yeah, I'm old enough to still have that scar.
Have vaccinations changed a lot over the years as well?
You know, they have. I think, you know, at the beginning, it was pretty rudimentary. It was just kind of a learning process for a lot of pharmaceutical companies to try to figure out how to do this well. But they've really upped their game and done a lot over the years to make vaccines, you know, safe and effective.
You know, you always run across new parents who say, well, I'm hesitant to let my newborn get all these different vaccinations and shots, and especially as they go into, you know, preschool, et cetera. What would you say to those parents?
You know, we want to be respectful of that. You know, we have found that vaccines are safe, but there's always concerns that are out there. And some parents are concerned about giving them all at one time. And so at our clinic, we'll space them out and we'll bring the kids back and give a few at a time or one at a time, if that's what the parent prefers. But we found that really, the vast majority of kids do very well with the standard recommendations from the CDC.
Are there any, I don't know, words of wisdom you would give to patients, future patients, and just those out there as far as raising that child from birth?
Wow, that's a tough question. you know, I think I've lived enough life to know what it's like when children get really terrible childhood diseases. A lot of kids that got measles and mumps and rubella, some of the other things that were more traditional, I guess, in the 40s and 50s, they would have problems with their vision or with all kinds of different other concerns, encephalitis and other things like that. And we just don't see those. And so we think that it's not a possibility. And so when we know that we have a good, effective vaccine that can help people, I really encourage it.
Are there more illnesses that are more prevalent here in the Middle Tennessee area, or maybe the South, more so than other parts of the country?
You know, I don't think so. I think we see a lot of what the rest of the country would see. There's not anything really unique, I think, about our environment or our weather or anything like that that would make a difference.
This time of year, what are a lot of people experiencing the most when it comes to illnesses like the flu or maybe something else?
Oh, yeah, flu. Oh, my goodness. Flu, COVID, and RSV. We have seen a huge uptick in that over the holiday season.
And there's ways to avoid getting all of those, right?
There is, but, you know, especially like with the holidays, everybody wants to be with family or friends. Everybody travels. They get in small groups. They go to people's homes. There's always somebody who's sick and coughing on everybody else, and then they get exposed, and then they travel back home and spread it to the rest of the community. So we normally will see an uptick over the holidays, and we did. If I looked at the Tennessee.gov data recently, and there was just a huge spike at the end of November all the way through December. But thankfully, over the last week, we're starting to see a slight downtrend.
That's good.
It is good.
By the way, if anyone has any questions they'd like to ask, you can text us at 615-893-1450. Again, 615-893-1450. Dr. Chris Dunlap. So what do you do on days like this? You know, the typical Monday through Friday. What does your day look like?
In general, I'm working at the clinic helping teach the residents. So it's on-the-job training for our team. They've already graduated from medical school, and so they're seeing patients. And we, as faculty, are seeing them as well and just working alongside them, showing them the ropes and trying to help train them up to be really excellent physicians.
I know there's been lots of talks about not enough doctors, not enough nurses these days. And MTSU even has a new program where they're trying to get more doctors into more rural areas. And they've got a medical program now, of course, for that. Yep. But how big of a problem is that? Because you're boots on the ground. You're actually out there. So what do you see?
Yeah, we actually see that as well. It's at our clinic, the St. Louis Clinic, when we opened our doors back in 2011, I think we saw about 2,000 patient encounters. And this past year, essentially 14 years later, we saw 25,000 patient encounters. And that's just our clinic. A lot of that has to do with the growth of our community. And I know everyone that's listening is very well aware of that. But the other part is just that there's just not enough physicians to go around. And so our program as well is focused on that. And we try to train up our doctors to be able to practice in small towns and more rural communities.
It's amazing the growth that we've seen here and the growth that's forecasted to come. But I think we're going to see even more than what's forecasted, especially with all these wildfires in California.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's interesting. It's certainly a terrible tragedy, all the things that are happening over there in California. We have seen in our community an uptick of people who have moved. And so I know that that has been impactful. But honestly, the people that I've met have been just absolutely amazing people. We've got a couple of really good friends from California. So we certainly welcome them. But it's hard to keep the facilities and the things that we need for all of our population.
Are we going to be equipped to handle this influx? Because I know in about 30 years or so, in fact, UT talks about how the population is going to surge in 30 years plus to around 700,000 in Rutherford County.
Wow, that's a big number.
It's a very, I mean, that's hitting a million. I mean, that's close to it.
It really is. Wow, that's impressive. I will tell you this, when I first came here back in 2013 to start the residency program, we needed about 90 physicians to meet the need of the just general primary care. We did some statistics, I guess, 3 years ago, right after COVID hit, and we were down to 60. We only needed 60 to keep up. And so even though that's still a tremendous number of people, we're making a difference with the residency program. We graduate 9 doctors now each year, and each of those typically will be able to keep, you know, 2,500 to 3,000 people in a practice. So inch by inch, we're trying to stem the tide.
I know it's important for people to have a family doctor, and it's probably important to see the same doctor over your years because they get to know you, your records are all in the same office. It does help. But is it hard these days to continue seeing that same doctor, or are doctors moving elsewhere? I mean, once they are here for 5 to 10 years, do they typically move, or do doctors like to stay in place?
I've seen a trend in our younger generation to be mobile. They can go lots of different places, and certainly with primary care, you're needed everywhere. You know, every state is requesting more physicians. Every country is requesting more physicians. And the nice thing about what we do with our program is we try to recruit people that have ties to the area that are more likely to stay because they just love it. And we've actually been very successful being able to recruit people from other states who stay here in Murfreesboro just because they love the community so much.
Going back to those illnesses that are, you know, more prevalent right now versus, you know, in the summertime, things like the flu.
Yeah.
The flu shot. How important is that to get a flu shot, and does it really help that much?
You know, it kind of waxes and wanes each year. We have to sort of guess what the flu is going to do each year, and we look at other countries to try to make our vaccine so it'll be as effective as possible. The good news is this year we've done really well, and so the vaccine's been more effective, and that's been really good. We're seeing a lot of influenza A coming through the community, and the vaccine seems to be helping.
That's good. And the flu shot is one of those things that's been around, gosh, for years and years and years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So since at least the early 70s.
But, of course, it does change, I guess, every flu season. I mean, or before the flu season starts, hopefully it changes.
It does. You know, it's interesting. They actually look at the flu that's over in Japan currently to make our vaccine for next year. And the people in Japan look at our flu strains now to make their vaccine for their upcoming flu season. And so I don't understand why, but flu tends to travel the world and it mutates as it goes. And so each year we have to make a new flu vaccine to match the new strain.
For those who like to get online to diagnose their illness themselves, there's a lot of dangers to doing that, and it also causes a lot of anxiety. But do you see more and more patients who come in and say, you know, here's what I have?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Dr. Google, I think is what they call it. Yeah, I called Dr. Google, and this is what he thinks. And you know, sometimes it's on target, but it can really throw you off and send you down the wrong pathway. And so we always encourage you to see your medical provider to kind of sort through the fluff, because the internet gives you everything, and you really need a focused approach to what your symptoms are.
You know, it almost seems like no matter what symptom you have, you type it in, cancer is what it comes back with. And, it, you know, probably 9 times out of 10, that's nowhere near close to the right thing.
No, that's true. And it is. We ran into this in medical school. Every time we studied a new disease, we would have symptoms of that disease. I'm like, oh, I think I have that, you know, that headache, or, oh, maybe it's a brain tumor. I mean, we just do this as people. I think we think the worst. And so it's really helpful to have a physician that you trust, that knows you well, that can do the appropriate test to really keep you on the right track.
The mind is a very powerful thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you as a doctor realize that, especially when patients come in and they tell you all sorts of symptoms they may have. But the mind's amazing.
It is amazing. And it can be helpful, you know, with a positive attitude. A lot of people can overcome some really difficult things, or it can be really harmful. And having a negative attitude can really bring people down and even lead to things like depression and fatigue and other things like that.
One thing that Americans deal with, and this has been an ongoing problem and trend among Americans, and that is obesity. That's something that a lot of people do have a tough time with.
They do, and it's not an easy fix, right? We talk about all different kinds of diet plans and exercise programs and things like that, and it continues to be a real struggle. That, you know, with obesity, we see a huge surge in type 2 diabetes, which is probably one of the biggest epidemics that we struggle with, and not just for adults, but for young kids, too. We're seeing it in our teenagers and people that are more sedentary and just eating too much and gaining too much weight. So it is quite a struggle.
And of course, there's even shots available out there that you can get, I guess, to help you lose weight. But how dangerous you know, doing things like that, going that route instead of naturally losing weight, how dangerous are those routes to go, or are they not?
Well, all medications have potential side effects. You know, thousands and thousands of people are using these new agents. The injection you're talking about, we label them GLP-1s. There's some different brand names out there. I don't know if I'm supposed to announce those or not, but things like that are very, very popular. But what we've found is that they're really only a temporary fix. They may help in the short run, but you really have to make positive lifestyle changes. So, you know, eating a little bit less, or maybe eating a little bit smarter, or staying a little bit more active, taking the stairs and other things like that, just to try to increase your activity and minimize the number of empty calories that you take in.
It probably also depends on where you are in life. You know, are you at a point where you have new kids, newborns? You know, where are you? But I'm sure that really does change someone's health. As far as, am I raising children who are school age? Are they teenagers? How big of a role does all of that go into the mix to play in somebody's health?
I think in my own life, you know, my wife and I have four kids, and every stage of life is just different. When you have two-year-olds running around, you get a lot of activity because you're running around chasing that two-year-old. But there are plenty of times where you're sort of stuck, and you have to sit or just not be active, and you have to figure out ways to be creative with staying active. You know, even things like parking farther away in the parking lot and getting into Walmart or whatever it might be, little things like that actually can increase your activity and make a big difference.
We have a text message here, and the listener's asking, is COVID coming back and should I be concerned?
We have had a surge of COVID, and that has mirrored the flu. So just like I mentioned with the flu coming stronger after Thanksgiving, we've seen that rise with COVID as well. Thankfully, we have seen a slight decrease in COVID too. COVID for us in the medical field has been really quite a mystery. It doesn't follow the typical patterns. Like in the winter, we normally see flu, we normally see RSV. COVID, you can see almost any time of the year. And so if you're young and healthy, you know, you're going to do okay most of the time. But if you have chronic illnesses, or if you're elderly, or just struggling with different issues like emphysema, it's wise to get vaccinated.
Again, Dr. Chris Dunlap with us this morning. Are there certain age groups who are more prone to getting COVID, or is it certain persons who have more existing health problems?
Yeah, existing health problems are our biggest concern. When COVID first came out, the people that were at highest risk were the ones with type 2 diabetes and that were overweight. Those are the ones that seem to do the worst, and we don't really know exactly why that was. Young people tend to do much better. They can get COVID, they can feel bad for a few days, but they typically get over it pretty well. But people with type 2 diabetes, obesity, and then our frail elderly were our most at-risk population.
I guess any illness that is fairly new, or folks are just learning about it for the first time, is scary for anybody who gets it.
Yeah, 2020 was a tough time, and so nobody exactly knew what to expect, and the original strain of COVID was much more severe, I guess, than the later strains. Thankfully, it's gotten weaker as the years have progressed, and so that's been good. But yes, the initial year of 2020, 2021 was a tough time, and you know, our intensive care specialists and our ER doctors were just real heroes during that time to be on the front lines. We were there too, but I think they really carried the lion's share of that.
Did COVID play a big role in the number of nurses and doctors we have out there today, and those who are, maybe they were thinking about going into the medical field, but they decided not to even because of COVID, or was it the other way around?
You know, I think a little bit of both. I saw some providers that had been working for a long time that really burned out after COVID and decided to retire if they could. But we've also seen a young generation step up and realize, hey, we need medical people on the front line in order to help combat things like this. No one, you know, anticipates that you're going to have a worldwide pandemic. You know, we read about the Spanish flu, we read about the plague or things like that, and we think, oh, that'll never happen to us. And then COVID hit, and it really woke a lot of people up.
I have another text message here. This person says, I'm only 30 years old, but I have been having some issues. My doctor wants me to be on testosterone, and I'm just curious, at age 30, even though everything else is okay, should I or should I not do this?
I always want to encourage you to listen to your physician because they have information that I don't have here on the radio program. But testosterone does have benefits. There are certainly young people who need extra testosterone just because they may have issues with making natural testosterone on their own. But as with any medication, there are some risks associated with it as well. And so you don't want to use it haphazardly or without guidance. And so I would really encourage you to talk with your physician. And if you're not sure, there's always an opportunity to get a second opinion from an endocrinologist who is a specialist in hormones and other things of that nature.
The medical world, it's a lot bigger than just one sound bite. So I could see where it would be tough to say yes or no, go this way or that way, because there is a whole lot more to it.
It really is. And I think that's one of the hard things for the residents that I train. You know, we are taught in medical school, here's a problem, here's how you fix it. But in the real world, people are, they don't read the right textbooks. They don't have a simple problem. They have multiple issues or multiple concerns, and everybody's unique. And so we have to learn to tailor the treatment to each individual.
And that can be tough because in today's society, we are all give it to us in 30 seconds or less. And it is hard to slow down to really, truly understand something.
It is, but I think if you have a provider that's wise, they'll help guide you through that process. You know, it's not like Burger King or McDonald's. You can't just get what you want quickly and efficiently all the time. But it certainly is crucial. Our health is so important, and without your health, so many other things are just impossible to accomplish.
It seems like our attention span does get shorter and shorter. But for patients out there who want to explain whatever it is going on with them to their doctor, who they truly want to explain it to them, but they don't really always have the words to do so. What is a good way when you go to your doctor visit to actually get that message out there? Here's what I'm experiencing, but say it in a way that makes sense.
Oh, wow, that's a great question. I think in some ways that's the advantage of having a primary care doctor that knows you. They know how you think. They know what your concerns are. They know a little bit about your background and, in medical history. But they also know you as a person. I've got people that are introverts that are very quiet that I have to ask very specific questions to. I have others that are extroverts that will tell me far more information than I ever really anticipated.
That's got to make it tougher right there.
It is. But, you learn to sort through that and try to pick out the things that are most important. And I think that's where a good primary care doctor can really help you.
You almost have to narrow down your symptoms somewhat, because if you just say everything that's going on in your life, that's going to make it hard to really pinpoint anything.
It is, but it's interesting. I was taught in medical school, if you just learn to listen well, the patients will tell you what's wrong with them, and usually they'll focus on the things that are most pressing, whether it's headaches or back pain or stomach pain or even just feeling down. There's just so many things that affect people, but they'll let you know the things they're most worried about.
Depression was one of those things that more and more people started having those symptoms of depression during COVID.
Yeah.
Is depression still a lingering after effect of COVID, or are people starting to feel better?
I've seen an upward trend. I do think people are starting to feel better. The social isolation with COVID and the anxiety of the unknown was just really devastating for a lot of people. We saw a lot of people that developed things like PTSD just for going through this stressful time and, going to the grocery store and not seeing food on the shelves. I mean, it's very unsettling for folks. I think a lot of people have just really tried to wall off COVID and kind of put it behind them. And I think that initial season is behind us, which is good. But COVID itself continues to live on, and we have to learn to deal with it as a new normal.
Anxiety, that's another one, because I believe for the first time shortly after COVID started kind of getting better, I started reading about how elementary students were reporting anxiety or signs of anxiety, and teachers were seeing it in the students. And I don't remember a time where I read about before or heard about children who were school age having high levels of anxiety.
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation out there as to why that was. Part of it was the social isolation. Part of it was not being able to touch people. We weren't supposed to shake hands. We weren't supposed to be within 6 feet of each other. There was just a lot of separation, and that's not good for people. We need to be able to have, appropriate, ways to communicate and touch and to be close to our friends and our family and things like that. Plus, the other thing that was a problem for younger kids were all the masks. You couldn't read facial expressions. Kids didn't know how to recognize those things, and things that we take for granted, you know, as we're developing as a 1 or 2 year old. I mean, these are things that they missed out on to some degree. And I think that's impacted their social interactions, at least some. There's a lot, again, of speculation as to how long those kind of impacts could be. But it's been a really unique ride for us in the medical field trying to deal with the after effects of COVID.
I never thought about that, but for children who are growing up trying to understand how to communicate better, it does have to be tough, and I'm sure it was very tough for them not being able to see the adult's expression when they were talking to them or explaining something to them. That would make it very hard for anybody.
Yeah, and of course everything switched to screens. We all got good at Zoom and Google Meet and all these different kind of things, and it's helpful. I mean, and it's nice to be able to have that convenience, but it's just not the same as being in person and being able to talk to people and see their facial expressions and their body language and other things that we really take for granted or just work subconsciously to understand.
I think for the most part, humans are not meant to be alone. And human touch is another part of that aspect that you brought up. But being alone in isolation and without any type of human touch or interaction, that really can hurt somebody.
It does. It brings a sense of loneliness. And loneliness is one of the things that we really, you know, struggle with, I think, as a society. Everybody has friends on social media, for example, but are they real friends? Are they really that close? And so I think we're in an interesting time where we have all of these different electronic options available, and yet we're missing out, I think, on the face-to-face encounters that we've had for, you know, generations before.
Somebody else just asked, when does flu season actually start, and is there a difference between flu and cold season?
Yes. So flu season varies each year. It can be as early as around September or October. Typically, it'll start to fade here in January and hopefully be gone in February or so. We never know for sure. It just really depends. That's why we have people get vaccinated early in the year. We start vaccinating towards the end of September and early October as much as possible. But flu is different from sort of the standard common variety cold. A cold will make you feel bad and it'll linger for 7 days, no matter, you know, really what you do. Flu is much more intense, typically with high fever, shaking chills, feeling like you got hit by a truck, those kind of symptoms. And it's like a cold, certainly, because it's a virus, but it's more intense and more challenging for people to overcome.
Is there any truth, you know, moms and grandmothers, I've always said to the kids, you know, don't go outside in the cold without a jacket on, you're going to catch a cold. Are there any truth to that?
You know, it's hard to say. You know, certainly, you know, you want to prepare for the weather. You don't want to just run outside in a t-shirt and, you know, in jeans, because our bodies do respond to cold. It is interesting. I learned in medical school years ago that there are certain types of viruses that are activated by the cold. And so those are more prevalent during the cold season. So, you know, going out without your hat on, you'll get chilled easier. Going out without your jacket, you know, it's not wise. You know, people run a little risk, but you know, you got to decide which chances are appropriate.
Again, Dr. Chris Dunlap with us this morning. We're going to take a short break and then we will be right back. If you have any questions, feel free to text us at 615-893-1450. Stay with us. Again, we'll be right back.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's restaurant. The salmon is my favorite, and then we have a variation that's on a regular menu for the salmon imperial that has some Alfredo, some crab, some shrimp on it. But the salmon is fresh, and we cut it fresh. But all of our fish, you can either get blackened, or you can get it with our regular seasoned salt. And either way you do it, it's just out of this world. I'm not a fish person, but I will eat it at Demas's all the time. Come eat with us at Demas's restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Get old. Old National Bank, that is. Old National Bank has the experience and service you need to buy a home, make investments, even online and mobile banking. Old National Bank is in the borough on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Old National Bank at 2230 Dr. MLK Jr. Boulevard, which used to be Mercury Boulevard.
Visit us and enjoy warm, homemade cookies at Old National Bank.
Old National Bank, Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
This is WGNS Action Line. talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you.
Today's guest on the Action Line, Dr. Crisp Dunlap with Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford. With today's conversation, here's WGNS's Scott Walker.
Tell us a little bit more about what you do day in and day out for those who may have just tuned in.
Yeah, so our residency program trains doctors after they are out of medical school, and we train them to practice family medicine, so all ages, you know, from pregnant moms to newborn babies, all the way up to the elderly and end-of-life care. That's what we provide. And so it's pretty much a full spectrum of anything you could imagine that comes into our doors.
Is family medicine the most diverse out there?
Yeah, I think it really is. You know, when you go through medical school, you get to, you know, rotate through several different specialties like cardiology or gastroenterology, endocrinology, surgery, things like that. And they're all wonderful fields. And we've got some great physicians here in town that do those things. But for us, the family medicine, we like a little bit of everything. And so it's good for us to be able to have a good solid knowledge base that can help guide people through their general medical care.
Somebody comes in and they have whatever the problem may be. You may send them to a specialist. They may get treatment there. But let's say it is something like cancer. Are they still coming to see you on a regular basis?
Yeah, we really prefer that. And so the specialists are great about sending us information about what their care entails. And then we're trying to make sure that the patient understands that as a secondary support, you know, for understanding a lot of the complex medical issues that they may be experiencing. And also just taking care of the other general issues that they may be having as well as this more serious issue.
And there are, gosh, the variety of patients out there, the variety of problems out there is just so extensive these days. And I'm sure it's a growing list of concerns for everybody.
Yeah, it really is. And again, I think there's a certain type of individual that gets attracted to that. You know, when we go in the clinic, I'll be there this afternoon, we may see a newborn baby with jaundice. And then the next room, we may see someone who sprained their ankle at a soccer game, or the next person may be struggling with new onset schizophrenia. I mean, you just never know. In some ways, it's extremely overwhelming. And at other times, it's extremely exciting because we have the opportunity to really meet people where they are.
This person just texted and they said, I was referred to a pain clinic and I haven't gone yet, but I feel like I'm going to be judged just because of that. But the pain I'm continuously in is overwhelming. Any recommendations or thoughts?
Yeah, pain is so difficult and no one can feel your pain. And that's what makes it even harder, I think, for patients, because they want to be heard and they want to be validated that they really do have issues. The great thing about pain clinics is that they don't just offer pain medicine. They offer other opportunities to try to improve whatever's causing that pain. So if it's a back issue or some other chronic pain issue, they have different methods other than just medication to try to help.
You look at opiates and problems they have caused in people's lives, but then there's a flip side to it. Well, how have they helped people's lives? I mean, how do you look at that type of medicine both ways and understand it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Opiates certainly can be very addictive and have caused a lot of trouble, and overdoses have been on the rise in the U.S. And most of the time, that's from people using those medicines inappropriately. And so people like your trained physician or pain clinics and other things like that, the goal is to offer you as little pain medicine as you possibly need in order to be able to function appropriately. So it's not about having zero pain. It's about having pain that's tolerable, that allows you to have enough activity and quality of life to keep moving forward.
You know, I've met people who have gone through back surgery after back surgery, and the pain they talk about, and you can just look at them and see the pain. Yeah. I can't imagine what some folks go through.
Yeah, it's tough. And after multiple surgeries, you know, there's increased risk for that because of scar tissue and other things of that nature. And it's one of those things that is one of the more difficult challenges, I think, that we face on a day-to-day basis. But by using specialists like pain medicine specialist, or sometimes your neurologist or even anesthesiologist, we have ways that we can try to help people to cope and to function and hopefully to improve over time.
Again, our number is 615-893-1450. Feel free to text us. Are things like Botox safe to use?
That's a great question, too. That's part of aesthetics. It's becoming much more popular. Lots of aesthetics popping up. But in general, Botox is very safe to use. The person that's administering it needs to be trained. So make sure that when you go to a new aesthetics group, you have confirmation that they know what they're doing and that they've had experience with that. But yes, Botox can be used safely. But with all medicines, there are slight risks.
The person who does Botox, do they have to be an RN, a doctor, anything to look out for?
A lot of these clinics are run by physicians, and so they have a physician overseeing everything, and they have other people that work underneath their supervision that would do some of the administration. But most of them have some type of training that I would encourage them to look for.
It seems like, I guess, cosmetic surgery in general, you know, overall, including things like Botox, I guess, but cosmetic surgery, plastic surgery has really grown in popularity a lot. And I'm curious, are things like plastic surgery safe? You know, if you're doing it for a reason of, I want to look this way versus that way?
Sure. That's a loaded question, I guess. But we found, you know, the local providers who offer those do just excellent jobs. They're very careful with their techniques. They're careful with follow-up, all those different kind of things. The problems that we see in our clinic are people that go overseas, go back to Mexico or to other Caribbean islands and get some type of plastic surgery and then come back. And there's really no oversight. We have no idea what they had. And so when they have complications, it's much more challenging to take care of.
I've seen those stories on 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary.
It is. And of course, it's all about cost. You know, it's less expensive there, but at the same time, there's higher risk. And so you have to weigh those risks.
Again, Dr. Chris Dunlap with us this morning, and we only have about 2 minutes or so left, but for those who are listening, who are concerned about something they're experiencing with their health and they haven't been to the doctor in years, where should they turn? Should it be a hospital? Should it be a walk-in clinic? What should they do?
You know, if you can find a primary care physician, that is ideal. And we're always taking new patients, but I can tell you from experience that the wait times are long. So if you have an urgent issue, I always encourage you to go to an urgent care facility. We've got lots of really great facilities around town, but ultimately you need to be plugged into a physician's office that really knows you and can care for you on a regular basis.
For most age groups, is it recommended that they go to the doctor once annually as long as they're not experiencing anything crazy?
Yeah, that's true. If you're otherwise healthy, once a year is good. But once a year is important because then you can hopefully find problems before they become major issues and head them off and take care of them ahead of time.
So is every 12 months usually enough time to catch something before it gets, you know, too bad?
Yeah, I think so. The statistics show that in general, every 12 months, if you can get screened, that's a really good way to make a positive impact on your health.
Sounds good. Again, Dr. Chris Dunlap with us this morning. You can be found locally, I guess, of St. Thomas Rutherford here in town.
Yeah, I work at the St. Louise Clinic. We have 25 residents and 2 nurse practitioners there. We have lots of opportunity to take new patients, and we'd be happy to see you.
Sounds great. Well, thank you for joining us this morning.
It's been my pleasure.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.